All right, Luke chapter 13, beginning in verse 10, we kind of start this next section that starts to look at this interaction that Jesus has with this woman. And if you recall that from our previous section, Jesus is kind of coming off of this exchange that he has with speaking about settling with your accusers and going to a situation where he is speaking about receiving him correctly. And he's kind of been saying this all throughout chapter 12. And then he kind of ends with this parable at the end of chapter 12, talking about this parable of a fig tree. Right? And in the parable of the fig tree, there's this owner of the fig tree who sees it there, and he sees that it has been an unfruitful fig tree. It has been a tree that has been planted in a vineyard, so we know that the soil is good. We know that there is richness there. We know that other things are flourishing. We find that this tree then is a tree that has been established for fruit to benefit the to show that it is indeed prosperous and getting proper nutrients. It should be performing rightly. We are told in that story that the owner has come and looked for fruit for 3 years. He has looked for fruit to be on this tree for 3 years. And in that process, that tells us that this tree is about 6 years old, as the a tree would have been established there. And according to the book of Leviticus, they would have needed to let it be established for 3 years before they went to look for fruit. And so this tree is about 6 years old, but seems to be unfruitful. And the owner of this tree, then he says, I think it's time to cut this down. We're ready to get rid of this tree. But we find that there is the person who is dressing the vines there. And he says, well, before we do that, why don't you give me one more year? And I'm going to dig around the base of this tree and aerate the soil there. I'm going to add fertilizer to it. We're going to put more care into this and see if we can't get a response. We're going to see if we can't get this tree to bear fruit. And he tells the owner there, if we get to the end of this and the tree's still not bearing fruit, then cut it down. But if we do all this work and it starts to bear fruit, then we've saved the tree and we get to enjoy the fruit of that tree. And so this is kind of what we leave off there. And of course, as Jesus is saying this, he is speaking to Israel and the religious leaders operating with this hard-heartedness, this unwillingness to receive the testimony that he has shown again and again and again, trying to get them to respond rightly to him. And yet they refuse. They refuse to recognize him for who he is. They refuse to recognize God's plan of salvation. And so he says here through this, by way of this parable, that the people who hear him ought to begin to bear fruit. But there is a day coming where there is a judgment. There will be a judgment if you do not bear fruit. And so kind of that's the background to pay attention to as we start to move into our text this morning. And here is what we read in Luke chapter 13, beginning in verse 10. Now he was teaching in one of the synagogues on the Sabbath, and behold, there was a woman who had a disabling spirit for 18 years. She was bent over and could not fully straighten herself. So again, this is another instance that we find throughout the Gospel of Luke, through Jesus's history, where he is in an ordinary place on an ordinary day. This would have been a custom. This would have been a tradition. And you find as you go back through the Gospel of Luke that there are many times where Jesus is in the synagogue teaching on the Sabbath, doing regular things, spending the time with the people of God, teaching from the scriptures. He is there among them with this large group of people. And in the middle of this, we find that he has this encounter with this woman. He sees her. And Luke describes for us her condition. Look at how he speaks of her, both in physical and spiritual terms. He describes her condition this way. Behold, there was a woman who had a disabling spirit for 18 years. She was bent over and could not fully straighten herself. So this woman is in the synagogue. Jesus sees her at a distance. He sees that she is in a poor physical condition. She is bent over in such a way that she cannot stand up fully straight. The level of her curvature, we do not know. But it seems to be enough that there is, people take note of it. It seems to be that this is an ongoing issue. And Luke tells us here that this simply isn't just a physical condition. Now, this is not the case for every physical condition, but Luke specifically calls out for us here that this is connected to a disabling spirit. And when he speaks of that there, he's not just saying like, this is the state of her condition and this is what's going on. He says that there is a spiritual impact that has had on her life. That is, there's something spiritual that is allowing her to have this physical condition. Now, this isn't the case for every single physical condition. This isn't the case, you know, you find plenty of times throughout the New Testament where Jesus just deals with somebody and they just have something that they've existed in their life from birth. There's they have blindness. They have all sorts of things, whether they've experienced brokenness in their body through natural causes or supernatural causes. Both of those cases exist in the scriptures. And here we find that Luke calls out that this seems to be one where there is a physical condition that is caused by a spiritual component. And perhaps here, he doesn't say it more explicitly, and we don't see it more explicitly in what Jesus is doing and how he speaks to this woman. But most people believe that this is probably related to some sort of oppression from Satan, or like a kind of a demonic element that's at play here. And so we find that this is her case, that it's left her in this condition for a good many years. This is why Luke explains it being as 18 years long, right? So she's has this crazy condition. It's super severe, 18 years. And that's intended both to give us the information about her struggle, her hardship, but also as readers to begin to empathize with her. This isn't something that she's had going on for a week. This isn't something that it's just been something that's like, okay, well, like, you know, she's just kind of getting used to figuring out how to live with this. This is something that has been afflicting her for a great deal of time. And she's unable to stand up straight. She's fully bent over. And we see that that as she's in the synagogue, as Jesus is teaching, he looks across the room. He sees this woman and he reaches out to her. He calls to her. She doesn't ask for this. She doesn't say anything. She's just there. And Jesus himself initiates. He steps out and says, I see you. I see you in your hardship. I see you in your oppression. I see you in your brokenness. I see you in your difficulty. I see what you're going through. And a lot of times, as we're going through life, we kind of think that Jesus doesn't care. He doesn't really know. He doesn't really see us. But he does. She didn't ask for this. The other people who were in the room didn't say, hey, Jesus, by the way, we've got this woman over here. In fact, this woman, perhaps she's been there multiple weeks. We don't know. We're not told. But what we do know is that Jesus does things in his time at the perfect time, and he knows and sees all that we're going through. He can see us in our hardships and in our difficulties. He can see us when we are in a situation where we are flailing about and we're beginning to fret and wonder and question, like, does God even care? Does he know? Does he see me? Does he know the difficulties that I'm going through? We find, of course, that this is the case, that he does see, he does know, he is aware, and he initiates this exchange with this woman. He sees her condition. He has compassion upon her. He sees that there is brokenness in her life, that she is not whole. And in the process of this, he is moved with compassion. He's moved to act. And so he declares at a distance, like, just think about how like radical this is. He sees someone across the room and he calls her over and he's like, hey, come here. And she comes over. And he just tells her, woman, you are freed from your disability. Like, what a crazy thing to say and what a crazy thing to hear. That is probably not what she expected when she showed up that day. That is probably not what anybody expected. That's probably not what anybody was thinking was going to happen, right? It probably would have been more likely that it'd been like, you know, you're distracting people, or, you know, people probably been like, oh yeah, you know, people can't see. Can you like move to the side, right? Or like, can we talk after? But Jesus doesn't say that. She shows up, she walks over in response to him, and the result of it is this declaration that Jesus makes over her life. He tells her, you are freed from your disability. You are freed from your condition. Jesus acts by calling to her and declaring to her that she is free from her condition. Now, I want you to see this here. Jesus doesn't ask her any questions. He doesn't ask her to qualify why she is deserving of this. He doesn't ask her what she believes. There's no mention of her faith. The only thing that is being demonstrated here is Jesus' pure authority, right? This is not to say that Jesus doesn't care about do people have faith and is this normative for the New Testament. The point that's being made here, remember, is do you respond to Jesus? Are you going to be a tree that bears fruit? As the fertilizer comes, as that power enters into your life, are you going to respond and bear fruit? Jesus calls to her, and she comes to him. Step one, good. If he speaks to you, go to him. If he says something to you, listen. But then beyond that, he tells her, you have been made whole. He is not asking her to qualify whether she's deserving of it. She's not having to really prove her faith by any means. What this is about is showing that Jesus has authority and that he is able to heal. His word has the authority to reverse this condition. His word has the authority to free her from this bondage. If Jesus declares it to be true, then it is true. His promise is sure. So at this point, he has said this to her and said, even though you're currently in this state, I tell you, you've been made whole. She hasn't yet stood up. He didn't come and touch her and then she received that. And he's like, look, you've been made whole. She's received word of the good news before she's received that promise, the fulfillment of that promise. She's received the promise of the word of God that he has said, this is what I'm saying about you, but it has not yet come to fruition for her. A lot of times, this is the friction point where we get frustrated with the Lord. Like, he said stuff, you said you're going to be with me, you said you're going to like do these things for me. I'm in the hardship, I'm in the difficulties, I'm trying to figure out where I'm supposed to go. I'm trying to figure out how do I follow you? You know I want to do the things you want me to do, but I don't know where to go. And we're just like, why won't, you know, we kind of get all riled up. He's promised to be faithful to us. He's promised to speak to us. He's promised to give us all that we need. And he will be indeed faithful to his word. But we've got to be patient for him to deliver on what he's intending to give to us. For this woman, it does not seem that she has to wait long because, again, the point here is not just for her to receive healing. It is for her to receive healing. But the bigger point is for everybody to see that Jesus is who he says he is. So she gets to be the byproduct of Jesus just being who he is. She gets this healing, this wholeness, this brokenness as a byproduct, which is Jesus being himself. Here's what happens. Look at verse 13. And he laid his hands on her, and immediately she was made straight, and she glorified God. So Jesus now backs up his words, what is already true, what is already said of her, woman, you are freed from your disability. He speaks to her. This is a promise. This is true of you. She hasn't received that yet, the fulfillment of that promise, but now she does. Jesus lays his hands on her, and immediately she was made straight. Like, I'm not sure, like, did he just, like, touch her and all of a sudden she was just like, whoop, I'm standing up straight? Or did he just, like, grab her and just be like, whoop, nope, now you're standing up straight? Well, like, what happened? We don't know. We don't know. But we do know that Jesus is always moved with compassion, and it results in him touching and being intimate and relational with people. He's not going to just send you like the update, like via email, like, FYI, why don't you try to stand up straight now? Like, I said this about you. I'm just circling back. Just want you to know. He's always there with you in that moment, in that situation, saying, here we go. We're going to go together. Because it's in his presence that we have that confidence, right? That's what confidence is. It's rooted in faith, right? And again, faith is in him, not in us. Her faith by itself, she couldn't stand up because she'd probably tried many years to stand up straight. She probably tried many years to straighten her spine out. But it failed again and again and again. But with the touch of Christ, his promise, his word is sure. It's true. And he puts his hands upon her and says, let's go together. I'm going to enable you to do that which you cannot do. I'm going to enable you to overcome that which you have been able to participate in, to act upon. It's the enabling touch of Christ that allows us to go out into the world to live each day as believers. Because he's the one who helps us, who empowers us to walk for him, walk with him, to live with him each day. She is immediately made straight. She stands up. There's not an instance. It's not a slow process here. But as he does this, he backs up his words with action. Now, this does a couple things. It brings the healing to her. But number two, it verifies for her, and it verifies for the watching crowd that his word is power, and his power heals. He has the authority. There are immediate results. She receives the benefit and the blessing. And the response then is one of acknowledging that this has come from God. Right? This is how Luke writes it for us in verse 13. He laid hands on her. Immediately she was made straight and she glorified God. Three really short clauses that are all action. He laid hands on her. She was made straight. She glorified God. This is giving us the life cycle of the believer. As we deal with hardships, as we deal with difficulties, as you just go through your regular day, you get up, you meet the Lord in the morning, you ask him, like, Lord, empower me, touch me, send me out. Immediately you have what you need, and you go throughout your day trying to glorify God. And then you start it again the next day. And sometimes you start this cycle again in the middle of the day because you're just like, oh man, I'm going through it. I've got hardships. I've got difficulties. I need you to come and meet me, Lord. I need you to come and be with me in my hardships and my difficulties. I need you to lay your hands upon me again. Make me straight. Direct my path. Her long ordeal is over. It is past. This woman begins to respond in praise and recognize this connection between Jesus and the empowering that God has given to him. Now we get the contrast of this opportunity to respond in praise in verse 14. But the ruler of the synagogue, indignant because Jesus had healed on the Sabbath, said to the people, there are 6 days in which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be healed, and not on the Sabbath. So Luke, he trots out this second part of the story, and he's like, so Jesus did this crazy thing, was like amazing, and then like the ruler of the synagogue, super mad, didn't like it one bit. He just comes straight out and says it. Like, this is the response. This lady praises God. This guy who's supposed to be in charge of all of the super religious stuff that's happening in this building, he's not so happy about it. You see the contrast that's happening there? Woman who's been like oppressed and been broken, super rejoicing, guy who's in charge of all the like super spiritual stuff, big problem for him. He didn't like it. You're supposed to see this contrast between one tree that's responding and another tree that's not responding. The ruler of the synagogue doesn't even take time to speak to Jesus about it. He's there watching this. This woman gets healed. And what does he do? He takes his complaints to the crowd. Instead of speaking to Jesus, he speaks to the crowd. He said to the people, there are 6 days in which work ought to be done. Come on those days and be healed, and not on the Sabbath day. So he's like chastising this woman, like, you shouldn't have shown up today to get healed. Number one, she didn't show up to get healed. She was just there, and Jesus was the one who stepped in and was like, hey, what's up? I see you in the back there. Why don't you come over here? So she didn't even show up for that. It was Jesus' own prerogative to do it. The rest of the people are getting chastised for like, well, don't you also ask for being healed today? In the synagogue leader's view, he is pushing back on this is the wrong day to be healed. The Sabbath day is when work is not supposed to be done. So he's considering this healing to be work. That this effort that's been put forth by Jesus, this is considered to be work. And so this was inappropriate, he says. But like, think about the effort that went into like the healing here. Like, Jesus just spoke words, which are clearly allowed on the Sabbath. And then he put like his hand on her, also allowed. But the actual power to heal is God. Like, that's not work, right? So God can't break the Sabbath because it's like his Sabbath. He can do whatever he wants. So you're going to stop him? You're going to be like, God, that's a bad idea. Okay, like you set up the rules for the Sabbath. It said no work. He can do whatever he wants. But this complaint here, and how Luke kind of frames this out for us, and he brings this here, and it seems like Jesus is totally just tracking with the trajectory and the point that he's trying to make here, because this is almost a mirror of what has been done many times, all the way back to like Luke chapter 4, Luke chapter 6. In fact, why don't you flip over to Luke chapter 6 and we'll just kind of read these quick set of verses here that kind of help paint for you the same attitude. Remember, this is analogous to this parable of the fig tree. Just as the fig tree has had 3 years to be to produce fruit and it's not producing fruit, and again, there's an argument to be like, let's try to fertilize and water this tree even more and give it more opportunities. Here's another opportunity that Jesus is giving in Luke 13. But here's some of the early opportunities that they already had. In Luke chapter 6, it opens with the disciples going through a field with Jesus on the Sabbath. This is how Luke describes it in verse 1. On a Sabbath, while he was going through the grain fields, his disciples plucked and ate some heads of grain, rubbing them in their hands. But some of the Pharisees said, why are you doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath? So they're all mad because they're walking through this field and the disciples like put their hands down and they like pick up some of like the grain that's on the stalk, right? And then they're kind of like rubbing it to remove the outer chaff part. And, you know, they're probably letting go of that. And they're eating the They're eating the little kernel of the wheat there to sustain themselves as they're going through the field. So basically the Pharisees are like, you guys are doing work on the Sabbath because like when you grab it, that's like harvesting. And then when you like, when you rub it between your fingers, like the husk and the chaff separate. And so like that is like that's like threshing. So you're threshing the wheat there. So that's considered work. And then like when you like let the other pieces fall, it makes like a little dent in the dirt. So like that's considered plowing. So you're like threshing and plowing. And like they have like all these like crazy rules around like something that accidentally made a dent in the dirt or whatever. It's like, come on, are you for real right now? And so this is how they're being about this. And they confront Jesus about this. And he says in verse 3, have you not read what David did when he was hungry and those who were with him, how he entered the house of God and took and ate the bread of the presence, which is not lawful for any but the priest to eat, and also gave it to those with him? And he said to them, the Son of Man is Lord of the Sabbath. Then we get this continuing passage in verse 6. Jesus just makes that point there that like the Son of Man, like he's in charge of the Sabbath. He is the ruler of the Sabbath. And he's saying, like, I'm the Son of Man. Now we get to verse 6. On another Sabbath, right? So Luke bookends these two right next to each other. He entered the synagogue and was teaching. Okay, so same situation as what we got today. He entered the synagogue and was teaching, and a man there whose right hand was withered, and the scribes and Pharisees watched him to see whether he would heal on the Sabbath so that they might find reason to accuse him. But he knew their thoughts, and he said to the man with the withered hand, come and stand here. So, similar situation. He knows what's up. He's there. The Pharisees, scribes and Pharisees know, even before like Jesus even shows up, that there's this guy. Jesus loves to take care of people. He loves to fix brokenness. And he sees this guy's got the withered hand. They're like, they're probably talking to each other like, yo, I bet you when Jesus gets here, he's going to see that guy and he might try to like help him. Right? So they're like all mad that Jesus might try to help this guy. Like, how crazy is that? Okay. And then Jesus does show up. He does see them. He knows what they're thinking. And so then he intentionally instigates this. And he calls them over. He calls this guy to him in the same way. The guy didn't ask for anything. He's not there saying like, hey, Jesus, by the way, I'm here. It'd be great if like you could help me sometime. That didn't happen. Jesus says, hey, come here. Same situation. Verse 8, come and stand here. And he rose and stood there. And Jesus said to them, now he's like, okay, now we're gonna battle. So he speaks then to to the crowd, and you know, really he's kind of talking at the Pharisees here. I ask you, is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or do harm, to save a life or destroy it? Right? So of course no one's gonna answer because they're all like afraid. And after looking around at all them, he said to him, stretch out your hand. And he did so, and his hand was restored. But they were filled with fury and discussed with one another what they might do to Jesus. So all he does is lay out the principle, like, hey, like maybe you want to think about this. He's not trying to like get them to be like all upset. He's like literally asking this question in like an honest way. Like, hey guys, like, do you think it's lawful on the Sabbath to do good or do harm? Like, which one of those? To save life or destroy it? Like restoring life, restoring something to wholeness, or like or breaking something down? Which one of those do you think is the better? He's kind of just like weighing these things out and like, I'm helping you make this logical leap that this is how it works. Like the Sabbath is not about destroying people or breaking things or letting brokenness reign. And then he brings forth this miracle. And so as we come to the text in Luke 13, again, we're at the same situation with the synagogue. They're going through the same thing. They see the same situation. Jesus heals this woman. And the ruler of the synagogue is all upset. So this is kind of like a replay. And the leaders are kind of being shown to have learned nothing. Is this another year? Is this another season where the fig tree has had an opportunity to bear fruit, but has not? It refuses. Despite all of Jesus' work, all of his teaching, nothing's changed with these guys. So he tells them, as they're complaining about this to the people, they don't even address Jesus. Jesus responds to them, and he says in verse 15 of Luke 13, you hypocrites, does not each of you on the Sabbath untie his ox or his donkey from the manger and lead it away to water? So Jesus comes back now with the synagogue leaders, like rebuked all these people. He's like, yo, like, let me step in here and speak to you. He tells him, like, you guys are hypocrites. Now, he doesn't speak only to the ruler of the synagogue, right? Because the ruler of the synagogue is the one who's, like, making this fuss. But you notice that Jesus responds not in, like, the singular. He doesn't call this guy a hypocrite. He calls, like, all of them hypocrites. Like, all the religious leaders. You guys are hypocrites. It's not just the religious leader who's alone in his thinking here, this ruler of the synagogue. He's speaking to all who would oppose his perspective. Anyone who would be found to be thinking like this ruler of the synagogue. And he says, don't each of you guys on the Sabbath, you get up in the morning and you think like, okay, well, I'm going to like, my animals that work so hard for me during the week, they're probably like thirsty. So I'm going to untie them and lead them over to water. And they can have a drink. Make sure that they have have what they need. It's an act of care and compassion for the animals. He continues and he says, you guys, you're ready. The perspective of your heart is one in which you are ready to do these small acts of labor and show compassion to your animals, but you don't care about this woman. You've elevated the animals above this woman. In untying their animals and taking them to water, they're showing that they're hypocritical, that they are willing to do for a lower creature what they are unwilling to do for a person. They're inconsistent in their practice. He speaks in verse 16, he says this, and ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 years, be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath day? So Jesus comes back and he says, just like you feel it's important to go out and to water and feed your animals and untie them and make sure that they have what they need on the Sabbath, shouldn't you feel that same act of care and compassion for this woman who is a daughter of Abraham? See how he parachutes right into that term there? He's like, she is a member of the lineage of Abraham, which would have been like incredibly important to the religious leaders. You have a mandate to care for the people of Israel, to operate with them in a certain responsibility. You have a responsibility to care for them above the animals, above the other nations. You've got to care for this daughter of Abraham. He says, this woman has been bound by Satan for 18 years. Ought not this woman, a daughter of Abraham, whom Satan bound for 18 years, be loosed from this bond on the Sabbath day? He says, just like you get up and you think like, hey, maybe I'm going to like untie my oxen and my donkey to go out and get water. Don't you think like it's fine if we like loosen the bonds on this woman from like Satan? Because like she is like a part of like the lineage. Like this seems like a logical thing. Like maybe we should consider that. Like we should consider the fact that, you know, she is not an animal. So elevated. She is a daughter of Abraham. And so God would want to have victory over Satan. This seems like a practical thing. But the more that he says this, and the more that he speaks of this, the more that he's getting into the actual purpose of the Sabbath. Right? Remember, the purpose of the Sabbath is about things being made good and whole and full. So it's not that Jesus is just saying like, you guys, you should really just like not be worried about this because it is a win, right? It is a win. She could be made whole. He's not making an argument for their acceptance of this on the basis of like the lowest level of logic. In fact, when he's doing this and practicing this and saying this, he's saying, not only is this something that is okay to happen on the Sabbath, in fact, it's most appropriate for it to happen on the Sabbath. Because this is the day where we celebrate God making things whole and calling everything good and entering into true rest. And so this woman who's been struggling, who's been having hardship her whole life, what more appropriate day could there be than the day in which we celebrate that true rest? When we celebrate rest for the people of God, why would we not want her to have this rest? This is the day that is most appropriate, not least appropriate, for her to receive this. This would have been a fulfillment of the Sabbath, not a breaking of the Sabbath, not even something that was marginally allowable by the Sabbath. And then the response there is, again, another opportunity to understand, how do you hear his words? Look at verse 17. As he said these things, all his adversaries were put to shame. So they were put to shame. People who were upset with him, mad at him, they didn't like it. They were angry about it. But then we have the other group, the people who hear it, and they rejoiced at all the glorious things that were done by him. So those, some people get it. Some people are upset about it. They don't. They're put to shame. They are called out, and they are seen to be a people who are opposing the actual Sabbath. But there are people who get it. They do respond. There's an opportunity. I want you to see here that this is a clear divide between two groups. As Luke writes, he speaks to all of the people and all of the people. He didn't say some of the people thought this and some of the people thought this and some went away pondering. There is a decision that is made. You are either an adversary or you're someone who is marveling and rejoicing at the glorious things done by him. He doesn't leave us a spot where you're allowed to kind of sit on the fence and be like, oh, I'm going to kind of figure this out a little bit more. It's not possible to remain neutral about these events. His action forces a choice. Now, that doesn't mean that if you're an adversary, that as you continue to see him, you can't be like, you know what, that Jesus guy, he's right. I'm going to finally deal with my stubbornness. With my hard-heartedness, I'm going to humble myself and say he was right. But there are two camps that we see, two groups that form with no one left in the middle. The healing doesn't leave any room here for anybody in the story to sit on the fence. And this is what we're intended to see coming off of the fig tree. Remember Luke 13, 8 and 9? Leave it alone this year until I dig around it and put on manure, add fertilizer. Then if it bears fruit next year, great. But if it doesn't, then we cut it down. The Lord is infinitely patient. He's just been trying again and again. I mean, you can go back through the Gospel of Luke. This same kind of pattern of what happened in the synagogue has happened so many times. Not exactly in the same synagogue, but it's basically like, so many times where there's been an opportunity for people to hear and see and understand the power of God and be like, do you want to respond or do you want to reject him? And it just plays on repeat. Some people believe, some people reject, some people believe, some people reject. And this is how we are supposed to come out of this story about the parable of the fig tree. And to understand that this is another opportunity for us to decide, what do we really think about the claims of Christ? Are we going to be a people who are going to bear fruit? We're going to trust in him and say, you are the way. You are the risen Lord. Or are we going to be hard-hearted and reject it and insist on our own way? He welcomes us to trust in him in faith. He's calling to us across the room saying, hey, come over here. Be with me. I will make you whole. I will restore you. I will put my hand upon you, and you can go out rejoicing. That is my prayer for each of us, that we would respond in that way, that we would welcome his healing touch and go out rejoicing with the power and authority that he gives to us so that we might live for him and help other people discover the faithful touch of the healer. Let's pray. Lord, we are grateful for your word, for the truth of the scriptures. We're grateful that we can respond to you in faith. And we're grateful that you're not asking for us to have this big old, like, this massive amount of faith in which we understand how it works perfectly so we can do it the right way. You're simply looking for the smallest amount, just for asking for us to respond. Enough a little to make that confession of weakness so that you might be strong in it. And so we respond to you collectively this morning. We want to respond in lives of worship and gratitude and thanksgiving. And so, Lord, would you be glorified in your church? We invite you to bring your healing touch upon us. We need your help. We love you. Amen.